This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
your award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
Hey, you. Yeah, you, in the cafe. Did you know that over half of the people who listen to Joy are allies of the LGBTIQ+ community, just like you? So you may not be aware, but times are very tough financially at Joy, and we're reaching out for your support. Tell your next-door neighbour, your friends, and even your dad to head over to joy.org.au and help us build Joy Nation by making a donation. Joy, your voice, your radio station.
A unique mix of world news and queer culture. Saturday Magazine. Every Saturday, 10 till 12 on Joy 94.9.
And you're listening to Saturday Magazine with Paul and Tass. Good morning, Paul.
Morning, Tass. Morning, Tass. And the great thing we were talking about beforehand was just about what's going on in the world. And one of the things we were going to be talking about with John Pizzuto was some of the stuff that's been going on in Australia, but also some of the stuff in China. Now, we're just trying to get hold of John on the phone. He's not picked up. So, John, if you are listening to us this morning, we are trying to get hold of you so we can pick up our conversation.
Hey, I've also had some feedback from Macca. And he actually sent it to my private phone as opposed to the Joy Studio text service, partly because he's actually used language that really would not make it through the filter.
Why does that not surprise us, hey?
And 317, look, we love you too. One of these days we may actually get to meet you or speak with you. We've had another message. Thanks for the fresh perspective on cluster outbreaks, Tass. It definitely needs to be seen as part of our new normal. Caution needs to be our new start mantra. The Victorian Opposition Minister and his mouthy front bench have been a disgrace over the past week. That's a message from 359. Thank you very much, Alistair. Look, I'd like to talk about that stuff with John. I'm keen to hear what John's reflections are on the opposition. I think their behaviour is a little bit odd, to be quite honest. What are you saying, Paul?
I think one of the things we were going to talk to John also about was just what's happening with schools. And I think one of the key issues we have is that we've got a system of state governments and federal governments that are just not talking the same language at the moment. And I've got lots of colleagues who have got children who have been struggling to try and balance the difference between working at home and homeschooling and looking after their kids. And I think from then there's a definite need to want to try and rebalance that. What I don't think is very helpful is to have the pollies not aligned on the best course of action to actually deal with the coronavirus isolation and actually have a policy that is one size fits all for the country.
Look, I think that's an interesting point. My response to that is that if you live in Victoria, you listen to the Victorian health authorities and leadership. If you live in New South Wales, you listen to New South Wales health authorities. I don't think that there is a one fix that suits everybody. The very day that we had the federal government attacking the state government around the opening of schools, there was a cluster outbreak in the school. Now, it's actually sorted, it's settled, it's okay, but you have to be cautious. And my response to that is the person that you should be listening to is the Premier of the state that you're living in.
We can hear from John now, if you'd like.
Have we got John on the line?
Let's see what John has to say.
John, good morning.
Cass, how are you? Sorry about all that. I don't know what happened there, listeners.
Morning, John. Good to have you on air with us this morning.
G'day, Paul. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Thank you. Can you hear John in your headphones there?
No, my headphones aren't working for some reason. John, can you hear me now?
I can hear Taz.
Okay, John, we were talking just off air a second ago, John, before you came on there, just about what's been going on with schools. And I just want to get your view about what do you think in terms of the current federal policies versus what we're doing here in Victoria?
Yeah, look, it's obviously been a little messy at times. I think it's slowly sorting itself out. And I think the important thing, as far as I'm concerned, is that subject to the Victorian Health Advice, that kids are going back in a staggered way. I think it's on the 29th of May and the 9th of June. So that's a good thing that they're going back. And I think it's important that they go back before the end of Term 2 so that Term 3 isn't interrupted with that transition back at the start of that term. So I think what it's shown is for the first time we've had a national cabinet, which has generally been working pretty well. We've got to remember that and look at it positively, Paul, I think. I think coming out of this, some lessons have to be learned about coordination between officials at state and federal level. I think it's fair also to recognise that the overwhelming health advice of the Australian Health Protection Principal Committee was that it was safe to go back. But it's kind of, that kind of debate now has passed, and we're moving on now to getting kids back, which is great.
Good morning, John. It's Tass here. I'm back
G'day,
again.
G'day, Tass. Can you hear me now?
I can. I actually can't hear myself that well, but that's another story. We'll deal with that later. John, do you think we're moving in the right direction? Is Victoria moving in the right direction with schools?
I think so. I'm really pleased that kids are going back, as I was just saying, before the end of Term 2, because if we had delayed it to Term 3, I think that would have jeopardised, I think, Term 3 or a large chunk of Term 3 as well. I've got three daughters and, you know, they've been doing the best they can, but it's not nearly ideal, and I don't think anybody believes that. So I'm really pleased that we're going back. I know that there was a little bit of messiness, if you like, between what was going on at the federal level and the state level, where you had the Australian Health Protection Principal Committee saying it was safe, but also at state level, the Chief Health Officer here saying that there was a need for a delay. It was all a bit unseemly at times, I guess, but the most important thing is we're going back. As I was saying just a moment ago, Tass, I think it's important that we learn some lessons out of this about how we manage things going forward. And, you know, I'm a lawyer by background, so I often likened it to someone when I was talking the other day that it's a bit like when a court of appeal is reviewing a decision. It's a lot better when you have a unanimous judgment, even if there are slight differences amongst the judgments, because when you have a single unified position that represents a considered consensus between all of the relevant chiefs, it makes it easier for everybody else to follow. And what I hope out of this is that there'll be some internal mechanisms that can be improved so that the entire population can say, okay, that's the decision. There might be disagreements internally, but they've arrived at something they can all live with, and now we can move on.
Yes, I agree with you, John. I think that's a great analysis. I think your analysis is very much driven by, you know, your legal background and your desire to actually have evidence-informed policy development. But what about the politics of this? The politics have been really interesting. You know, on the very day that Dan Tehan was getting stuck into Daniel Andrews, Daniel Andrews was putting out a media release alerting the state that he's shutting down the school. What do you think was going on there? What was all that about?
I think that just reflected some of the frustration there. And what I'd say, Tass, and to all of our listeners, is that it is going to get a little harder from here on in. We're over the worst of it, let's hope. Right? And we've done really well. I agree with your comments before we went to air when I was listening to you that, yeah, we've done really well as a country and as a state. We have really suppressed numbers. That's a great thing. But we are now moving into a stage where there is going to be genuine and legitimate disagreement over how we return as far as we can to the situation that persisted before COVID-19. And that's going to be as much applicable to schools as it is to businesses and the economy and just general social activities. So what I've been saying to people is, yeah, we've got to be able to entertain that, but there is going to be a real contest of ideas. We're seeing it in Victoria, we're seeing it in other states, and we're seeing it nationally. I'm not sure that's necessarily a bad thing. My main concern is that it be done in a way which, you know, doesn't alienate the community and that it invites the community to say, well, here are different options.
So I'm very tempted now to ask you about the Victorian opposition and their behaviour over the last week or two, and in particular some of the commentary that's come from Tim Smith and his Twitter account. What are your reflections on some of that?
Look, it's not the way I approach things. It's not my style of politics, but Tim and I are good friends, so I don't give him advice over the phone or on
the radio.
I certainly don't give him that, but I have a very different style. But I think what's interesting about this week is that there has been some discussion about that. I would concede that, Tass. But I guess for my part, and you know, I don't hide the fact I'm a committed Liberal and do everything I can to support my party. What I thought was interesting is we had a a day or two there of major announcements from the opposition, which I would have loved to have spoke about more.
Yes.
And I'm not sure whether you've had a chance to do it, but it really is worth having a look if you get a few minutes to have a look at the plan that Michael O'Brien released yesterday. I'm not saying that to spruik the politics as much as I could understand that might be the perception, but it's just interesting in that a big set of ideas was put out there. If you read the language, to be fair to Michael, it's very, I would say, very constructive. He's saying he doesn't agree with everything, but here's some ideas. But that is something that I think he would have loved to have spoken about more. And I certainly
unfortunately, though, John, you must agree that those ideas, great or otherwise, were drowned in some of the noise that was made by the opposition, within the opposition even, and a lot of that noise was attacking the person rather than the policy.
Yeah, I mean, Tazo, I guess I can only, at the risk of repeating myself, just saying it's not the way I would convey my ideas, and I think there's some great opportunities for oppositions, not just here in Victoria, but oppositions across the country, Liberal and Labor, and even the federal opposition. I know it can be frustrating. I've been around government and politics for a very long time, and it can be very frustrating at times of emergencies and crises to think we've got to be doing something. What I think it's really important for oppositions to bear in mind is that you can play a constructive role that elevates your role in a constructive way if you put ideas out. You don't have to agree with everything a government is putting forward. You can say, look, that's good as far as it goes, but we've also got some other ideas. You can actually make an influence and have a real positive impact if you want to. And for me, that's the lesson I'm trying to convey to others.
What's your personal view then about the rate of change here in Victoria vis-a-vis everyone else in terms of our return back to normality?
Look, subject, I'll give you a kind of a technical answer, subject to the health advice always, right? So put that up there. I do wonder whether on some fronts we could be moving a little more quickly, and we might talk a bit after the break if you want about why I say that. There are some aspects that I think we need to be moving much more quickly on because the damage could be greater the longer we leave it. But that said, and despite some missteps here and there, overall our health response has been very good.
You're listening to Saturday Magazine with Tass and Paul, and we're talking this morning to John Pizzuto. Tass.
John, we've just had a message from one of our listeners, Melina, who's a regular. Melina says, good morning, everyone. When you engage in personal attacks, it's not a contest of ideas. It's vile politics. You lose the argument and all credibility as a result. Signed, Melina. How do you react to that, John?
Look, thanks, Melina, for your message. Look, I have a certain style that I try to practice as best I could. I'm not a saint, but I've always tried to practice that. And I think most politicians do. Melina, all I can really say is what I said before, that, you know, I've got a certain style, which I hope is an effective way of communicating. There are people on both sides of politics. The style of communication can be very different. But I certainly subscribe to the view that you can win arguments, you can win support if you focus on issues and give people the choice they deserve, is what I'd say, Melina. But, it's a fair point.
Thank you, John. That's it's exactly what I would say, to be quite honest with you. Look, by the way, we are having some technical issues here in the studio. I think we've almost sorted them out. Please bear with us out there. Please bear with us, John. I apologise for the inconsistency this morning. We are still working in ISO, so to speak. Paul's in Studio 3, I'm in Studio 2, and Dylan, our panellist, is in Studio 1, and we've got our technicians sort of running around, Michael trying to support us all this morning. It's working. It's the best that we can do at the moment. But, John, let's move right along. China, what's going on with our relationship with China? What are your reflections on that?
Yeah, we're going through a phase of reckoning with China that I think has been building up over a long time, and I think we're seeing a manifestation of that here. As we all know, we've seen in the last couple of weeks Australia's push for an inquiry. And look, that's something I wholeheartedly support. I do think we should, given what's happened as a result of COVID-19, it is legitimate to have an inquiry that is not making prejudgments, but is genuinely looking at how did this happen? How can we prevent it from happening in the future? That, to me, is a no-brainer. That should happen. And we should bear in mind that, as at today's date, Australia's push for that has EU support, amongst support from many other nations, including the United Kingdom and the US, which have long supported that. but it's actually going to the World Health Assembly next week. So it's not as if this is an isolated call. It's got a lot of support. Now, in return for that, we've seen measures taken or foreshadowed by the CCP in China to target barley, wine, beef, wool, our higher education sector, which is worth $40 billion.
So it's going to hurt us.
Absolutely. But my own view is that we have to, as a middle-ranking power that is a proud country, that promulgates values which are universal and which have, I think, despite all of our challenges as a democracy, like every other country, is something we're very proud of, that we have to stand our ground, I think, on this and not be pushed around. I do think that our rhetoric at times could be more temperate for my money. That doesn't mean that you compromise your stand, not at all. It just means that we have to be prepared once we've taken positions to follow through on them. And what I'd say is what I think we certainly have to do amongst a range of things, Cass and Paul, is one, I think we should pursue these issues in international bodies like the World Trade Organization, where there's the basis for doing so, and there may well be here. I think despite the niceties between the two governments, ours and the Chinese Communist Party, it's clear that this is retaliation for that, in my view. And secondly, it does prompt us to think really seriously about how exposed are we to one major economy, and do we need to start diversifying our trade portfolio so that we're not just shipping iron ore, coal, or whatever it else we are exporting just to one market in particular. We have to really look across Southeast Asia, the subcontinent, elsewhere across the globe.
So, John, that was going to be my question. My question to you is that I totally understand the position I think we're going to be taking with China, but is now the right time to be doing it? We need some time to be able to forge those other relationships, to take our economy to be less China-focused, to be able to make sure that transition happens in a stable and managed way. Having a spat with China right now, as we're about to go into potentially a recession, just seems really poor timing. Is this the right stance to be taking at this moment?
Yeah, look, I'd say that's a fair point. I think events have moved so that we're probably going to have to adopt measures anyway. The other thing that I find frustrating, and none of the three of us can do anything about it, frankly, is that we just don't know.
So unfortunate, John.
What I meant by that was, that can be taken so many ways, sorry everyone. What I'm really suggesting is that it would be great to know what our intelligence agencies know, and I'm not pretending to know that, to know a tenth of what they must know about what's really going on, and I'm always just conscious of that. And so what I'd say, Paul, is that I think the ship has sailed. We've now got to move on this and move as quickly as we can. I don't think there is ever going to be a time that's more propitious to look at the origins of COVID-19, what we can learn from it going forward, whether we do it now, whether we wait 12 months. I think this is always going to be a difficult issue. So we kind of have to live with that. But we're going to have to make the most of things, and we're just going to have to deal with the fact that this is moving now and we have to respond now.
So, John, building on Paul's question, I've heard a bit of commentary in the media that, in fact, the stance that we're taking in Australia is in a sense a bit like being the sort of the poor cousin or hanging off the ape strings of the American sort of attitude to Chinese-American politics. Do you think that's a fair analysis?
I don't subscribe to that view. I offer you a different view. I think for us, the American alliance is strong. We can't pretend that it's not. And for my part, I think it remains and will remain for the foreseeable future a bedrock of our national security policy, the alliance with the United States. That doesn't mean we don't have our independent foreign policy, but we can't pretend that it's going to be disconnected from that important relationship. I think one of the most important things to happen in recent days has been the EU's support, the European Union's support for the motion, which suggests that you now have broader international support. It would be harder to promulgate the virtue of having an inquiry into COVID-19 now if our supporters were, you know, confined to the UK and the US. I think it's very important that's come out now. So I can understand how that perception can build, but there are some realities that I don't think anybody in Australian politics is looking to upend, and that is the primacy of the alliance. So it does make it hard, though. And I was listening with real interest to the discussion you were having about the US thing, not to go off too much, but, you know, when you look at what's happening over there, it does sometimes cloud what we're doing here. And I can understand how that happens. And what I've said in other occasions is that we have to maintain a strong relationship with the United States because of, you know, those reasons that I mentioned before. But yet you look at what's happening over there, and sometimes it can be hard, but we've got to remember it's Australia's national interest that we've got to promote and protect.
John, I was going to say that during the week I was chatting to my partner about, you know, what's occurring and what the impact of this recession is going to be and where this might go. My partner happens to be a reader of economics, which is not a topic that I know a whole lot about. But he said that in his analysis, if you look at the last recession, the three factors that made that work and got us out of that recession and kept Australia buoyant as an economy were, firstly, the cash injection by federal government into the people, which, of course, is something that's occurring on this occasion at the moment, and nobody would disagree that that's been very beneficial and very supportive for people to have money to pay their bills and get on with their lives. The second important thing is our trade relationship with China. And, you know, if you think about the GFC, which was, what, just about 10 years ago now, it was actually at its peak or beginning to peak. And the third factor was our ability to actually export education products. Now, the last two of that equation are not doing so well at the moment. And so that means that the impact of this recession is going to be quite different to the last recession, and in fact might be much deeper and much more widespread. So I thought that was a really, really interesting analysis. And of course, it actually plays into our discussion about our relationship with China as well.
Yeah, look, geopolitically, I wouldn't disagree with your partner's analysis there in terms of the importance of those things. Again, if you think about what are we going to need to do to come out of this, on the trade front, we've just been speaking about how difficult that's going to be, but I think in the longer run, if Australia can take a stand now, as I hope it will, sort some of these issues out now, to make clear that we've got some red lines around a few of these issues, that is really important. And it's going to protect us in the long run, because let's say if we don't do anything now to stand up for some of these principles we're talking about, when there is activity in the Pacific or in parts of our region that somehow compromise, in our view, our own security interests, are we going to be hampered in our ability to speak up on those issues because we're concerned about what measures will be taken to hammer our education sector or to hammer our beef exports or wine or wool? So there are some longer-term things there. The other point I just wanted to make, Tess, is that I do think your partner's right about the differences in this case. I worry about, and I know you guys touched on this before we commenced, is how quickly we come out of this. And I was really concerned and remain concerned at some of the figures that we've seen come out. We've got around about 230,000 employers just in Victoria, which makes up about a quarter of the nearly 1 million employers around the country who are surviving on JobKeeper to keep their staff on board. We've got employers, and I partly consult in some of the things I do on employment-related matters for organisations, and a lot of them now have been able to survive, not just with JobKeeper, with people being able to draw down on their leave to remain as employed. That's not going to last for much longer for many employers. So, yes. I'm very concerned that we're...
So, John, I think you're on the same line of thinking I think I'm on at the moment. We've only got a couple more minutes left, but I think if you take your line of thinking in terms of we've actually got a lot of companies safely through, we think. We've hibernated businesses. We've managed to keep them ticking over in the background. What can we do from a policy point of view that's going to get us up and running quickly, accepting the geopolitical issues we've got? Let's forget the relationship with China. We have to form closer relationships with Europe. But what about things like taxation policy and public spending that will really kickstart the economy to get us going? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, just quickly, I think you do have to look at as much tax relief as we can offer businesses so they can keep employees on their books and make investment decisions going forward. I think that just has to happen. At a state level, I think there's a lot the government can do, and in fairness, it's been doing some things, but there's a lot more it needs to do in terms of rates and charges right across the industry and different sectors. I think, you know, taking up some of the issues around COVID-19, manufacturing, not only do we need to resuscitate the sector, we need to grow it, and that needs to happen around the country too in terms of self-reliance. So on some of those things, at a sector-by-sector basis, we need to be offering as much relief so that, one, they can keep people on their books, and, two, continue to invest. And also, I know it's not immediately concerned with the economic impact, but the mental health impact, I think we'd all agree, is something that we haven't seen the full dimensions of this on our population, in my view, just yet. It's pleasing to see at a state and federal level, and I think with oppositions around the country supporting generally these measures, we're going to need to invest a lot in that too.
John, it's always delightful to speak with you. I'm sorry we've had some technical issues this morning, but the conversation's been really good. It's a good segue into our next guest, actually. We're going to be speaking with Dr. Blaschke from Melbourne University and Beyond Blue Clinical Advisor about the mental health impacts of COVID-19. So I think that's a topic that we're also very deeply interested in and deeply interested in understanding more about. John, thank you as always. I have got a question here. I have got a question here from one of my listeners and one of our listeners, I should say, and I do want to put it to you. And the question is, do you think that Tim Smith is after Michael O'Brien's job?
Well, he said he isn't.
He has said that. I've heard him say that loud and clearly.
He has said he is. Look, he's not being, and I think this is true about all politicians. You're going with a level of ambition, and I think he's made it clear that he's not seeking the leadership at the moment. But you know, he's never saying never. So I think that's about as much as you can say.
John, always good to talk to you. Thank you very much for joining us here on Saturday
John.
Magazine.
Yeah, have a great
morning.
Day, John.
We'll talk to you soon.
You too. Bye.
Saturday Magazine is proudly sponsored by Velocity Rewards, the loyalty program of Virgin Australia.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.